From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Jerome Sokolowski, VOA religion correspondent. Our topic on this edition of the program, countering violent extremism in Africa and the Middle East. Our guest, Ahmed Abadi. He's Secretary General of the Rabita Muhammadiya of Ulama, that's the Mohammedan League of Scholars, based in Rabat, Morocco, and established by His Majesty King Mohammed VI. Dr. Abadi also heads committees within the U.S.-Morocco Strategic Dialogue and Morocco's Higher Council of Education. He is in Washington in the context of these talks. Dr. Abadi previously served as Director of Islamic Affairs in the Moroccan Ministry of Islamic Affairs. He also taught comparative religion and Islamic thought at Kadi Ayad University in Marrakesh. He is the author of numerous articles and books on Islamic thought and jurisprudence. He is also no stranger to America, as he was a Fulbright Scholar in Residence at DePaul University and the University of Chicago. In late March, King Mohammed VI inaugurated the Mohammed VI Institute for the Training of Imams, Murshidins and Murshidats, that's the word for preachers, in the capital, Rabat. The religious training center aims to instill the values of Morocco's open, moderate form of Islam based on the Maliki rite and Sunni Sufism in the next generation of Muslim religious leaders from across the region and the world. The center is being billed as a key element in Morocco's ongoing efforts to promote religious moderation and tolerance as a shield against extremism in the region. Since late 2013, Morocco has signed accords to train imams from a number of countries across Africa and Europe, including Mali, Libya, Tunisia, Côte d'Ivoire, Gabon, Guinea, the Maldives, and most recently, Belgium. The new institute, the construction of which began in May 2014, has the capacity to train up to 1,000 students at a time on a modern campus of more than 7 square acres. It includes a library, a mosque, housing and dining facilities, as well as recreational facilities. Well, we'll be talking about Ahmed Abadi, about this center, and many other issues relating to countering violent extremism and spreading the moderate form of Islam practiced by Morocco for centuries. And Ahmed Abadi joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Jerome Sokolowski.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here, Carol.
Well, Ahmed Abadi, I'd like to ask you if you could talk about the purpose of the League of Scholars to which you belong and discuss your task in Morocco.
The League of Scholars is one of 5 main components of the religious field in the Kingdom of Morocco. The first component, definitely, is the Commandant of the Faithful, embodied in His Majesty, the King. His Majesty oversees the whole religious field. And the Council of Scholars would be the second component. This council is supposed to ensure proximity with citizens and provide fatwas. And as a matter of fact, in Morocco, we do differentiate between fatwas and irshad, because irshad is what is existing in the books, whereas fatwa requires ijtihad, and ijtihad requires a whole arsenal of tools and of know-how. Then the Rabita is third dimension, which is the dimension of reflection, cogitation, and research. We do operate through 15 centers of research and 5 specialized units in various issues related to the field. And then we have the administration dimension, represented by the Ministry of Islamic Affairs. And then we have education. Those are the 5 components, and they are working in harmony and in complementarity, and the Rabita is like a religious academia that provides and produces the related content.
Let's talk briefly about this new center that we spoke about in the introduction. It's being billed as a key element in Morocco's efforts to promote religious moderation, for which it's known around the world, and tolerance as a shield against the extremism that we're seeing on the rise. But of course, that's a tall order. Talk about the prospects for success. Talk about the financing. And what comes to my mind is Morocco positioning itself, in a sense, to be a counterweight to the likes of, for example, Saudi Arabia, who has used petrodollars for decades now to spread its rather, one would call it rigid, puritanical, and some would say more of a distorted version of Islam, which some say is the pretext that some of the extremists use to commit violence in the name of Islam.
In Morocco, we do not like antagonisms, so we do not subscribe in this dynamic to counter a country or somebody who are doing it the positive way. We are just trying to share and to communicate what we have compiled throughout, I would say, millenniums in terms of living together. So our comprehension of Islam was quite a specific one, since we have made the difference very early between Islam and Muslims. And we took Islam and we did not take the dynasties that were trying to run the Khilaf in Damascus or after on and later on in Baghdad or later on in Asitana, Istanbul. Now, we had this reflex to differentiate ourselves from the epicenter, and we've had our way to elaborate and shape even the sciences of Islam in our manner. So the sciences of Islam, even though they would hold the same nomination in East and West, but yet their meaning would be quite different in the West. This center is a platform to share and to communicate, since the Kingdom of Morocco has received many demands to train imams from various countries, as you've so eloquently quoted. And this is just a platform. What is more important than that is the content that would be displayed there and the capacities that would be shaped and built in this center.
Let me turn to my colleague Jerome for a question.
Sure. Dr. Abadi, I wonder if you can talk about what you feel has been the pull for young Moroccan Muslims who've been attracted by the more radical forms of Islam, even the more conservative, the Salafi, or even the violent ones. I read somewhere that there have been 1,000 people going to places like Syria and Iraq to join the quote-unquote struggle there. I also used to live in Spain, and I remember the train bombings in Madrid in 2004 were actually carried out by young Moroccan immigrants. And many of them often came from the same neighborhood. I think there was one block in Tetouan, northern Morocco, that had, or like up to 12 people going to Syria. So could you talk about why these people are doing that and what you're offering, how you're going to counter that?
Yes, thank you, Jerome, for this question. But I would like to highlight the fact that compared to what is going on in the neighborhood, those numbers are very small and they're decreasing. And when thinking about that, we cannot but think about what's happened in Sana'a, in Yemen, and what is happening daily basis in Iraq and in other places. This, because Daesh and other fractions of violent extremism have developed communication, tooling, and a narrative. And this narrative is very efficient because it has been hijacking three main dreams that were displayed in the region a little bit more than 100 years ago. And those dreams are the dream of purity, the going back to the pure version of Islam and Islamicity. The second dream would be the dream of unity after the collapse of the Ottoman Khilafat. Now people have brandished this dream and have been recruiting around the sparkles of it. And then the third dream would be the dream of dignity. Daesh has captured all those dreams, plus the energies that were freed in the Arab Spring. They are basing themselves on some repetitive items that they use in their narrative. They will talk about conspiracy and scattering the Muslim world, and our governors are not doing anything about it, so we need to take things in hand, and please join and help us doing so, rebuild the unity. And to the issue of Israel, 3, the issue of colonialism, 4, the issue of double standard, 5, the issue of humiliation in the media and so, 6, the draining of wealth, and 7, the cocktail, Iraqo, Afghano, Burmese, Central African, name it, cocktail, and 8, the value system infiltration. And there are shooting the masses with those discourses that are having anchorage in reality. So the way to address those repetitive items definitely requires the production of some counter-narratives to allow the shielding and protection of youngsters. If you imagine yourself to be a young man of 18 to 30 years in the region and then assaulted by such a discourse and then being offered the dream to realize yourself, to be the head of intelligence in Daesh and to be married to the most pious and beautiful ladies in the world and to have a role under the sun. If someone is half illiterate, is jobless, prostrated, very angry because of the injustices they would see, definitely this is the case in the region. Why the numbers are so little in Morocco and yet decreasing? Because we've been tackling the issue quite a long time ago. It is not born today as a reaction. It has started decades ago. And this what shaped this aura and charisma and created this demand that was behind creating the center that Carol mentioned.
Just let me remind our listeners that we're talking with Ahmed Abadi. He's Secretary General of the Rabita Muhammadiyah of Ulamas. That's the Mohammedan League of Scholars based in Rabat.
So is it something about the Maliki school of Islam? Is it something about having a king who is commander of the faithful, having that kind of monarchic authority? Or is it something about being, I guess, on the fringes of the Arab world that you have other influences? I mean, what is it that allows you to undertake an initiative like this?
As a matter of fact, it's all of it. Plus the fact that we've had a geostrategic emplacement throughout our history. Remember that we used to be the Far West before this wonderful country was discovered by the European and Asian logosphere, because it used to exist and people were living here. And thus, we could analyze all the waves that would erupt in the epicenter of the world, in the Middle East, because they would arrive quite milder to our shores. And we could make our choices quite wisely because of this emplacement. The Maliki madhab, of course, is a madhab that exhorts Malikis to take in consideration the context, not just the text, and to take in consideration the modus operandi and proceed to junctions between text and context. Also, highlights the fact that any law has finalities and purposes. And when assimilating those purposes, you would be more flexible because you would have the architect's attitude rather than just the master builder attitude who would insist to follow up the blueprint literally. Plus the fact that the way Moroccans have picked up the pillars of their religiosity, we're always making junctions. We've been talking about the junction between text and context in ritual. There is another junction in the dogma and belief system that was picked up by Moroccans, which is Ash'arism. And Ash'arism is making the junction between text and reason. It is not just believing, it is understanding as well. Also, spirituality was there, and the Junaidism is making the junction between text and spirituality. Plus, the authority of the commander of the faithful, which is an inclusive position. Faithful is including, besides Muslims, Jews as well. And we are dealing also with the Christian presence in Morocco under this wonderful umbrella.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Ahmed Abadi. He's Secretary General of the Rabita Mohammedia Ulama. That's the Mohammedan League of Scholars based in Rabat, Morocco, established by His Majesty King Mohammed VI. I'm your host, Carol Castiel, along with VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolovsky. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. You can also send feedback via email to PCUSA@voanews.com. Either way, tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a shout out to a new Facebook fan, Abdul Hakim Salehi from Kabul, Afghanistan. Well, back to you, Ahmed Abadi. And I would like to follow up on something you mentioned. You talked about the Jews living side by side with Muslims in Morocco. We know this is going on for over 2,000 years, a harmonious coexistence. We know, obviously, as a result of the State of Israel, many Jews decided to immigrate to Israel. But I would like to think that Morocco's very multicultural fabric may have something also to do with its moderation, tolerance, living side by side with Jews for so many centuries, millennia. What are your thoughts?
This, of course, shaped an approach of mutual recognition. And mutual recognition gives you the breath to enjoy others' wisdoms as well. And others' wisdoms, when well used, would definitely generate a wider view, a wider horizon. And then you would enjoy the expertise of what used to be called the other, because this notion of otherness would be simply relinquished. And this is what happened exactly in Morocco. This is the alchemia that happened and was born and raised in Morocco, as well as in some other places in our globe. But in Morocco, we're proud to recall the fact that we were quite successful in enjoying the fruits of mutual recognition between Muslims and Jews in our country.
Getting back to the International Imam Training Center in Rabat, do you have some evidence of success, progress thus far? I know Morocco is actively training imams in Mali, where, of course, we have Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, AQIM, again, distorting Islam for violent or political ends. How would you rate success so far of the center in its goals?
In this center, in the predecessor center, we always discernate between three levels of training. Fundamentals, and this is a common ground between all the countries that are in our sub-Saharan voisinage, since we're all Malikis and Ash'aris and Junaidis. So the fundamentals are accessible, and we are trying to display them, insisting on the junction with the context. Then comes the second level, which is the specificities of those countries. Reading the context definitely requires local expertise, and this is why we insist doing it with our peers and colleagues in those countries to shape this second level of training. And then the third level would be the challenges that are in the region and in the whole world at large. Those definitely would suggest us to tackle some specific issues and try to prepare a decent and efficient curricula that would respond to those challenges and build up capacities among the trainees so that they can tackle them in an efficient manner. So those are the three levels, and this may be the recipe of such a training, because then the DNA of how Moroccans have been practicing, understanding before that, religiosity will be omnipresent in those three levels.
Now, briefly, before I turn to my colleague Jerome, I know these are early days because Morocco only signed accords in late 2013 and the center was created just last year, but how receptive have the imams from all these countries, how receptive have they been? Do you anticipate really having a strong impact, not just in terms of training, but even, you know, combating these the radical interpretations that seem to be taking hold?
Well, this is based on indicators and indices, because prompts evaluation should be built upon that. And I think, as you said, it is too early to talk about it now, since we have not applied the evaluation system based on those indicators. But optimism is there. And we hope for all the best, and we would say with all our brothers in humanity, regarding those challenges, we shall overcome.
There have been many Moroccans who've immigrated to other countries in Europe and the United States. How would you advise them to practice their faith in countries where, while there's religious freedom or they're free to practice their faith, they do feel an onslaught of cultural messages from the secular society around them that they may be uncomfortable with?
When you do transcend to the finalities of Sharia, of Islamic Sharia, you would discover an amazing venue, which is the fact that the six main finalities would be as follow. One, the preservation of life. Two, preservation of religiosity and freedom of religiosity. Three, the preservation of dignity. Four, the preservation of progeniture. Five, preservation of mind. And six, the preservation of money and property. We have been working on an index that would measure Islamicity of a state regarding those six finalities. Amazingly enough, we are now discovering that some countries that are not holding this label of Islam nor Islamicity would score a lot better than some other countries that are labeled to be Islamic, which means that the preservation, for instance, of life would be better in some other countries because the health system would be better, nourishment would be better, and name it. All the things that would be in connection with the preservation of life. Preservation of religiosity, it has also indices and indicators. And some other countries that are not labeled to be Islamic would score better than some and name it, which means that you would have a world without walls. And this started, as a matter of fact, in 1989 when the Berlin Wall collapsed and windows went up. Our world is different, Jerome, which means that we just need to communicate this to our co-citizens, wherever they are, to understand the real and true nature of our contemporary world.
And so do those considerations outweigh, for the pious Muslim, do they outweigh things like seeing women in bikinis or sexual imagery on television? I can imagine for a young Muslim growing up in Germany and Holland in the United States, seeing all that and then being confronted with the conservative mores of his own community, it must cause a tension in his own mind that may lead him to go crazy.
In the Holy Quran, there is this verse in Surah An-Nur that says, turn your gaze when you are confronted to such scenes that you are not accommodated with, just turn your gaze. Which means that Islam, as any other religion, would definitely focus on the inner side to build up those capacities. And among those capacities, and one of the most precious among them, is the capacity to say no. A human being, a homo sapien, without the capacity to say no, would not live a decent life nor a serene life. So the approach should be to build up the individual and the internal capacities rather than to change the world around this individual. It's like when the immunity system is collapsing within a human being. Any little disease would just affect her or him. Whereas when you build the immunity from inside, from within, then they can live and they can dwell in and they can have and conduct their life in a quite comfortable manner without paying attention to those diseases nor viruses.
Great, thank you.
And there is no compulsion at the end of the day. No compulsion in belief nor in attitude. And the human being in Islam, as in any other religion, is held responsible for her or his acts.
Dr. Ahmed Abadi, back to countering violent extremism and trying to prevent radicalism from taking place. We know that religion alone or the teaching of the Maliki version of Islam and the much more moderate version in Morocco in and of itself is probably insufficient, but absolutely necessary. What other factors or measures do you think countries should be taking to, on the one hand, try to de-radicalize those already who have been radicalized and maybe even imprisoned? What needs to be done in a holistic way
to
really... We've
been talking about three dreams. The dream of purity, which is about religiosity and so on. The dream of unity, which is decency in life and the optimization of the resources and synergy between those resources. This is the socio-economical dimension. And the dream of dignity, to be able to nourish yourself, to provide the others. And justice is one of the pillars of dignity. So justice goes along with transparency, with democracy. And this cannot have a true meaning without the educational dimension. Given the fact that when you have a youngster that would not reach the age of 18 unless witnessing over 40,000 crimes seen on TV programs, on movies, on video games, or simply on the news as factual happenings. If we do not implement in our educational system curricula that would counter such brutality and produce alternatives that would be yet joyful and colorful and without necessarily holding or wearing an adult face, to allow this appropriation, to allow this engagement, and allow also creativity through peers' education and so on. If we do not make sure that all those dimensions would be responded to, then religion by its own, yes, would stay as a capital factor, but it is not all the factor.
Another question from Jerome.
Sure. There's a discussion among Western and Islamic intellectuals as well, where some people argue that Christianity and Judaism went through transformations in order to allow the values and the legal necessities that we have in the modern world, to allow for democracy. And the question is whether Islam already has those elements or if something needs to change within Islam in general in order to allow a more democratic kind of life in the Muslim world.
No religion, Jerome, falls on a bare land. It falls on psyches. It falls on aptitude. It falls on previous Weltanschauungs and cosmologies and worldviews. And this is why there is always this crucial need to dialogue with religiosity, to derive from it your needs, your tangible needs. And we've been talking about the junction between text and context. This is one form of this dialogue, to dialogue with your religiosity, to derive from it its propositional force to respond to the challenges that would rise in your given context. And this is exactly what the word ijtihad means.
Which is interpretation, right, of the text.
How to interpret the text, taking in consideration the context as well.
Before we close, one brief message you have for all the youth who are listening, who may be, you know, nervous, worried about or going toward a more violent path. What is your message to them?
Religiosity is not just majesty, means do, not do, licit, illicit, halal, haram. It is also beauty and rejoicing. And the bottom line of any given religiosity would be to provide happiness. If we are not successful in deriving happiness from our religiosity, this simply would mean that we didn't get it right.
Ahmed Abadi is Secretary General of the Rabita Mohammadiya Ulama, that's the Mohammedan League of Scholars, based in Rabat, Morocco, established by His Majesty King Mohammed VI. Well, Ahmed Abadi, thank you so much for coming in and sharing
your
terrific...
Thank you, Carol, for having me.
Appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. And joining me on the program was VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolovsky. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.